Do you worry about how much you drink? Health-conscious and high-achieving women who prioritize clean eating, exercise, and anti-aging supplements and regimens tend to have a lot of anxiety when it comes to alcohol. We know drinking is technically a bad habit, but giving up our reward at the end of a stressful day feels impossible. And so instead of setting realistic goals and making incremental changes, the perfectionist strategy is to secretly worry that you might have to quit drinking for good because you just seem to lose control after one or two drinks. But when you compare yourself to your friends, you're a little less worried. Yet you don't actually know how much they drink beyond social situations, and you're afraid to ask. So, ironically, the criteria for alcohol use disorder has nothing to do with how much you actually drink. It's a subjective assessment based on a single question. Do you drink more than you think you should drink? Which means this is a thinking problem, not a drinking problem. In this episode, you'll learn the five mistakes that turn normal drinkers into overdrinkers, and I'll explain why the solution to overdrinking is not no drinking. My name is Colleen Cashman. I'm a soberish recovery coach, helping high-achieving women get emotionally sober so that drinking less or not at all feels like a superpower. Join me each week for evidence-based, holistic strategies to regulate your brain chemistry and nervous system and also develop a growth mindset so you can feel proud, confident, and resilient with or without a drink in your hand, because it's not about the alcohol. Welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm excited to do the episode today because if you've been following the show a little bit, you know I have a new TikTok account, right? And I've been doing a 30-day challenge where I'm putting 3 reels up a day. And as hard as that is to keep up with, I can say it is getting easier, but it's also giving me a lot of insight into how polarized the sobriety industry is. And I gotta say, I'm really happy and proud of myself that I'm not in that anymore. When I first started this podcast in November of 2022, I was completely sober and I did believe that 100% abstinence was the path forward. And part of me is considering, I haven't made a decision yet, but part of me is considering taking down the first 10 to 20 episodes that I did because I no longer agree with myself on a lot of the things I said. But for now, I'm going to let my truth as it was at that time stand because it's a great reminder that our truths are always changing. One of my favorite books of recent times is Brad Blanton's Radical Honesty, and he says, "Yesterday's truth is tomorrow's bullshit." Of course, there is a difference between big T truth and little T truth, but most people get highly offended at the idea that their truth isn't everybody's truth. But big T truth at its core is only an experience in the present moment. Everything else is a story. Big T truth doesn't require words to be explained. It doesn't need to be defended or justified. You can't argue with it because it is what it is. Examples of big T truth would be like, well, you're wet when it rains. There's sunburn on your face. Dog shit is usually stinky and squishy. And we use words to express and communicate the truth, but words are only symbols. It's kind of like thinking that the picture you're looking at of the sunset is actually the sunset, or the words that you're reading on the menu is actually the food. Words aren't a replacement for your experience. And where we create so much suffering for ourselves is we get so attached to ideas. And we think that ideas are right and wrong or good or bad. And we fight because we're so attached to our version of the truth, which is actually just a story in our head. And my other favorite new saying is, there's no such thing as a true story. A story, by definition, is a cherry-picked set of events with a theme and a purpose and foreshadowing and villains and heroes and a beginning and an end. And I can admit that I got stuck in the story of addiction and recovery and sobriety. Long after I put my drink down, I was still talking about my drinking problem. And that's because that's what I was being taught to do. And that's honestly why I am so passionate about what I do now, because I think women do need better options. Statistics show that it takes about 10 years on average for somebody who realizes they have a drinking problem to actually ask for help. Now, statistics also show that most people self-correct on their own, but the longer you wait to get help, the bigger the problem feels and the riskier the behavior becomes to your health, to your family, to your career, to your sense of badass self-confidence. Like, what I'd love to do is be the person standing here that's like, oh, you got a drinking problem? No big deal. Because it's actually quite normal. And the reason there's so much stigma and shame around having a drinking problem is because the only solution in the past has been for people to hit rock bottom, surrender their power, go directly to AA, do not pass go, get your new sponsor, swear you are never going to drink again, and then start making a list of all the people you've offended in your life and go start making amends. And that paradigm is actually probably what's driving a lot of the drinking problems, because the moment you realize you're a little bit in the weeds with alcohol, you have to hide it, because that's where you think you're supposed to go. Because in our culture, we are not taught how to properly use the drug we call alcohol. We are not taught that it is addictive for everybody, not just alcoholics. For years, I spent so much time Googling, am I an alcoholic? And taking all the tests, and they were pretty inconclusive. And I had a lot of evidence that I wasn't an alcoholic. I mean, I was killing it, running all cylinders. I was able to accomplish more before lunch than most people were able to do in a week. And I was doing it all with a hangover. How could I possibly be an alcoholic, right? And while there are so many good people who are living that as their truth, and they've chosen that, and they're thriving in that, it is not the only way out. And we also can't forget that truth is what's funding and perpetuating $142 billion treatment industry. That despite having abysmal records of actually helping people, I mean, like 75% of people who leave rehab relapse within 24 hours. And yet our courts are forcing people to participate in 12-step programs. And while I can see the benefits of referring to an addiction as a disease, because the alternative is to make it a criminal activity. And if we label it as a disease, then there's more dollars for people to get support and help because something is wrong with them. But in truth, addiction is not a disease. Addiction is just a habit. And telling people at the most vulnerable times of their life, when they are suffering from an addiction and all that goes with it, that the reason they're suffering from the addiction is because there's something wrong with them, they are an addict, and that they will be an addict for the rest of their life, well, that just sets up the cycle to repeat itself. Science shows that people who identify as sober alcoholics can have up to 9 times higher rates of binge drinking in the future, because they are taught to believe that one drink is a relapse. They are literally conditioned at the most vulnerable time of their life to believe that they do not have the ability to control themselves and that they have to spend the rest of their life living in fear. One of the things they teach you in AA is that you can't unpickle your cucumber. Once your brain has learned how to operate with high levels of alcohol, that's it. You'll never be able to drink again. And I have to admit, that was the analogy that got me. I believed it because it makes sense, right? And I love a good analogy, but you got to check your facts. In fact, science shows that the brain of somebody who has broken an addiction, within 6 to 12 months, the self-regulation department in their prefrontal cortex is actually stronger than people who have never suffered from an addiction. And by stronger, I mean denser. They measure the denseness of the prefrontal cortex based on the density of the neural pathways. So just to be a nerd about it for a second, when your brain forms a habit, it prunes your neural pathways. So it kind of cuts off all of the other options, because that's what a habit does. A habit automates processes for you so you don't have to think about it, so you don't have to make a decision. So the more you associate alcohol with stress relief, and the more you choose to relieve your stress with alcohol, the less your brain is going to suggest an alternative. It's a lot like the algorithm. You know, when you get on YouTube and you like a certain type of video, every time you click on one of those videos, your feed continues to populate with more videos just like that. And the longer you stay in the rabbit hole that you're in, the farther you have to scroll to see any other options. Well, that is what the brain does too. Its job is to learn what you like and then to simplify you getting what you want. And when it comes to addiction, the more contexts that you use alcohol to solve the problems, the smaller your problem-solving skill list is going to be. And so the gray matter in the prefrontal cortex actually shrinks, like it becomes less dense because all thought processes lead down one road to alcohol. But just like the brain prunes your neuropathways, it also builds them out, which is why, yes, addiction is a learning process, but so is recovering from an addiction. So is breaking an addiction. And once you have gone to the trouble to break an addiction, you are actually much less likely to go down that road again because you've already learned A, that's not a good thing, and B, how to self-correct. Research that started in the 90s and 2000s, so it's not that old, but we now know the brain is neuroplastic. It's always learning and always changing. And unless you are actively directing that learning, most of your learning is subconscious. You're just responding to your environment using strategies that have worked in the past. And this is why if you're not directing your learning, your life tends to be on repeat. You find yourself in the same relationships, having the same conversations, making the same mistakes over and over, and then you try to change your life and move far away, and then wherever you go, there you are. And that's because you're not aware that your thoughts are habits too, and so is the way you respond to your emotions. And the only way to change the trajectory of your life so that the future is not just a repeat is to learn that your feelings aren't facts and to stop believing everything that you think. This is what I call the skill of emotional sobriety, when you're no longer intoxicated by your own bullshit. And there is nothing more fun and liberating than realizing the only thing that's holding you back is you. But you're not suffering from a character defect or some innate ability to figure things out. It's just a skill deficit. No one's ever taught you how to properly interpret and process and respond to your emotions. My favorite analogy these days is to think of your emotions like an electric dog fence, keeping you in the yard of your comfort zone. And the only way to escape that comfort zone, because it ain't actually comfortable, right? But the only way to escape is to learn how to feel your feelings instead of thinking about them. That's the big thing. If you identify as an overthinker, then the problem is you're an underfeeler. You're making up stories in your head to try to get around whatever feeling it is that subconsciously you think is a fact. And here's what I mean by that. So let's just do a little emotional anatomy. Every thought in your head produces a feeling in your body. Your feelings are your thoughts. So the way you feel in any given moment is just a collection of all the conscious and unconscious thoughts and beliefs that are in play. Feelings are just the energetic sensation of a thought. Just like you can hear the words that I'm speaking, you can feel the thoughts that you're thinking. But the problem is you pay attention to the thoughts instead of going directly into the feeling with the skill of knowing how to process it. And here's what the thoughts in your comfort zone tend to sound like. Thoughts that have language like always and never, can't or won't, or I would, but, or I should, or I shouldn't, or I will when, or I will if, or the biggest lie we tell ourselves of all, I don't know. I don't know what to do. I don't know why this is happening. I don't know what's wrong with me. Those words in your brain, which are just ideas, not the truth, but those words that you hear in your brain that keep you stuck running laps in the cul-de-sac of stupidity are just the feelings that you don't want to face. Fear, frustration, resentment, guilt, shame, uncertainty, anxiety, all of them. And the first principle of emotional sobriety, the founding principle, is awareness. I teach emotional sobriety as it has 7 principles, and I will do a podcast on all 7 of those soon. But for now, let's just talk about awareness. Awareness is a skill. You have to learn to tell the difference between the thoughts in your head and the story you're telling yourself and separate that from what's going on in the real world. I actually teach this particular skill with something called a thought model that basically turns emotions into math problems where you can isolate the different variables and you identify the circumstance and then you put down whatever thought it is you're thinking and then you write down the feeling that you're feeling because of the thought and then you write down the actions that you are or are not taking because you're feeling that way, because you're thinking that way, and then the results that that's creating in your life. And always, the results that you're experiencing and perceiving, always those are a reflection of your thoughts, not the circumstances themselves. And when you develop this skill of being able to think emotionally sober, then it is so much easier to identify your own limiting beliefs and to realize where you're stepping on your own air hose and then figure out what actions you need to take to create a different result. And I'm not going to lie, you don't just snap your fingers and learn this skill overnight. You know, the women who join the Next Chapter, which is my group coaching program, they're in there for a year. That's what we're doing in there. Like the title of my podcast says, it's not about the alcohol. But it is time well spent, my friends. Because if you're not managing your mind and your emotions and your thoughts, then they're managing you. And you're just in reaction mode. Your emotions are biologically designed to get you to repeat the behaviors in the past because that's what's kept you alive in the past. And so even though consciously you may set an intention to be different, in the past, the behaviors that you've engaged in that have become automated habits, whether those be actual behaviors or whether they be thoughts and emotional reactions, whatever, the more you've done things in the past that way, the more your body is going to throw up resistance to you doing something different. And that's why I call your feelings like the electric dog fence. You got to learn to run through them. Everything you want is on the other side of that shitty feeling you feel. And so, you know, the ground rule in emotional sobriety is basically when you can't figure out what to do, do the exact opposite of what you want to do. That should put you in the right direction. And it really is true. It really works like that. You know, so that's why I talk about how I don't think that the drinking problem is a problem. It's an invitation to drop the emotional bags you've been carting around with that are getting fuller and fuller every trip you take around the sun. If you want to move into the next half of your life free with a purpose and a sense of direction and the skills to get out of your own way, you got to get emotionally sober. You know, emotional sobriety is a kind of another term I think of as mental health. What is mental health? You know, good mental health means that your beliefs about yourself and your beliefs about the way the world works, you know, all the stories you're telling yourself, allows you to successfully interface with the outside world to get what you want. And the more you are stuck in your head and stuck in your life and suffering under unpleasant emotional episodes and moodiness and emotional dysregulation and all of the things, the more you need to realize that's a mental health issue. And not to be afraid of that. It doesn't mean you have a mental illness. It means you have a skill deficit and you got some learning to do. And to bring this back around alcohol and to try to get myself back on track with this episode, sorry, what you need to realize is that over drinking, feeling like you can't stop once you start, feeling like you drink more than you should, over drinking, the cause of that, the number one cause of that is your belief system. And what keeps your beliefs perpetuating? Your emotions. So a lack of emotional sobriety, but that's me adding that in. Research shows that your belief system is the number one reason why you're over drinking. Dependency and even addiction on alcohol is not caused by the fact that alcohol is addictive. You interact with addictive substances all the time. You're able to stop and start and move on with your life. It is not alcohol's addictiveness. It's not that addictive. I mean, it is, but it's nothing that you can't resist the pull of if you have the belief system in place. It is also not your family history or your DNA. It does not matter if you were raised by a bunch of alcoholics or alcoholism runs in your family. What really runs in your family is a belief system. You were taught how to party and how to rally and how to think of alcohol as a reward or a treat or a social lubricant that you can't enjoy yourself without. You might have also been taught that staying sober is boring or pointless or hard or just for the alcoholics, because there's a difference between normal drinkers and alcoholics, when in reality, there's not. Anybody can get addicted to alcohol. You just keep drinking it. That's how that works. Science also shows that it's not your personality. The whole addictive personality, that's not a thing. That's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And the more you tell yourself you have an addictive personality, the more that becomes true. So I just want you to try on a new belief as you're listening. What if you believed that there was nothing inherently wrong with you that made it less likely or harder for you to correct your drinking and to move on with your life? Like, nothing is standing in your way except your beliefs about what is standing in your way. And again, that's an electric dog fence. So if you want to solve the alcohol use disorder problem, you have to realize the mistakes that you're making and then actively work to correct them. So let me go ahead and outline the 5 mistakes that are keeping you stuck. Number 1 is that you are identifying yourself as the problem. You are assuming that because you enjoy drinking and also maybe you have a high tolerance coupled with low willpower, that all of that is causing you to drink too much. So you think you are the problem instead of realizing that alcohol use disorder is the problem, and that it's a thinking problem, and that the solution to that problem is to change how you think. Changing how you think will change how you drink, but not until you stop seeing yourself as the problem or somehow incapable of learning. Like, somehow you got the only brain on the planet that doesn't actually have neuroplasticity. You know, if you need any encouragement there, if people can learn to talk again after a stroke, or learn to walk again after horrific brain injuries, like, don't you think that you can learn how to think differently and therefore act differently with alcohol? I mean, maybe. Okay, the second mistake. The second mistake is that you believe in a false dichotomy, black or white, all or nothing, either or thinking. You think you have to choose between struggling to control yourself or not drinking at all. Like, because you've struggled for so long in the past, you absolutely don't think it's possible to drink in moderation in the future, to return to just being a normal person around alcohol. And if I could get a little philosophical on this point for a moment, just consider that time is an illusion. Like, all time is now. The past is an illusion. The future is an illusion. They're just stories in our head, right? Do you believe more in the past than you do the future? Because neither one exists, right? And you can use the past to predict the future, or you can clear the slate and learn some new skills and create a vision for yourself that is only limited by your own creativity. If the truth is whatever you believe it is, a good question to ask is, what do you want to be true? And the third mistake that keeps people stuck with alcohol use disorder is they're all focused on how much they drink. They're trying to change their behavior instead of going upstream to the thoughts and the feelings and the beliefs and the identity that are causing them to behave the way that they do. I want you to imagine an iceberg. We all know, 95% of the iceberg is below the water, right? And it's just the small part, the tip that you can see that's above the water. Your behavior is what the tip of the iceberg is. Underneath the water underneath your behavior is the thoughts and the feelings and the beliefs. And then at the very base of the iceberg is like your sense of identity, who you think you are. So your behavior is driven by the thoughts and the feelings and the beliefs and your sense of identity. You don't do anything that you don't believe is possible for you, that you don't feel, that you don't think. Everything that you're doing on the surface of your life, the behaviors that you are engaging in, everything you do or don't do is a product of, at the foundation of the iceberg, your identity, who you think you are, which is why in the next chapter, we go directly into the identity. Because one of the biggest problems and the quickest changes you can make is to stop identifying as a drinker. Like, drinkers either overdrink or they can't drink, which is why getting sober, you're still identifying as a drinker. Now you're just a drinker who can't drink. But either way, your entire sense of identity is based on alcohol. And the way I teach to expand your identity is just to expand it, literally. Like, you can hold on to the belief that you're a person who enjoys drinking, but just putting in that language that expands it, you know, you're a person first, right? You're a person. And there's no reason to define yourself by whether you're drinking alcoholic or non-alcoholic beverages. I mean, we're not in high school anymore, you know? Nobody cares what's in your glass. And like I always say, thoughts are habits too. This may just be a carryover from your younger days, which is why awareness is your greatest tool. When you start noticing emotions that want you to behave in a certain way, you know, everybody's going out to one more bar and I'm a drinker, I got to go with them, you know? And no, you don't. Like, you just have to notice that feeling that comes up where it's telling you, okay, this is who I have been in the past and this is how I need to behave now. I feel bad, I need to keep going. And then you run through your electric dog fence and you're like, hey, bitches, I'm going home to bed. See you guys tomorrow. Hope everybody makes it home okay. Good night. Like, you just have to realize when your identity is a drinker in play. It's not actually that hard to let go of. It's just a subconscious program that you've been running. And so the mistake, number three, is instead of trying to reduce your drinking by from four drinks to three drinks, or, you know, whatever it is you're trying to change your behavior so to where you can tell yourself a better story, like, okay, I'm doing it right. Instead of focusing on your behavior, focus on your identity. Like, expand your identity. I'm personally identify as a badass who does whatever I want and can handle my shit, and I can self-correct when I make mistakes, and I've got strategies and goals and people and a purpose, and I focus on all of that. I've just widened my lens of how I'm seeing myself. And that's not hard to do. That just takes conscious awareness of when you're myopically focused on one little characteristic of yourself as a drinker or a non-drinker, and you just expand it. So that's actually kind of an easy one to change. So let's just go into the fourth mistake, which is focusing on the problem instead of on the solution. So your brain is a tool, right? And like any tool, it can be used for you or against you. I'm going to throw another analogy out there at you, but imagine that your brain is a lot like the Google search engine, right? The Google search engine is only as smart as the questions you're asking it. So if you're asking your Google search engine, why can't I drink like a normal person? What the hell is wrong with me? Like, those are the words in your brain. Well, you hit go and your brain goes off and searches for answers. And it starts generating a list of all the reasons why you probably can't drink like a normal person. Maybe a companion list of who the hell's fault that is. And then also a list of everything that's wrong with you. This is where emotional sobriety and having the skills to manage your mind, because you have to realize a lot of times your shitty feelings are just alerting you to the fact that you're asking stupid questions, or questions in which, what are you actually going to do with that answer? Why can't I drink like a normal person? For example, do you want to know the answer to that? Like, what if you asked a different question? What are you even going to do with that except have a pity party because there's so many reasons why you can't drink like a normal person? Like, this is where you have to manage your mind. And so shifting to the solution, instead of why can't I drink like a normal person, how do I learn to be emotionally sober? What are the skills I need to manage my mind and to learn how to interpret and process and respond differently to my emotions? How do I set small goals that feel achievable? Who can I ask for help? What do I need to support myself? What kind of resources and guidance and accountability? Like, do you see how those questions feel differently in your body? Like, just sit with those questions. Feel the difference between, why can't I drink like a normal person? That feels heavy and sad and frustrating. But asking yourself, how do I learn what I need to learn so I can get unstuck, so I can move forward? Like, that's a much better question. How? There's going to be a solution. You type that into the Google search engine, you're going to get some ideas. And you let your brain chew on that, and it's going to generate some creative solutions. So stop focusing on what's wrong and start asking yourself, what else is possible and what do I need to make that happen? All right, and finally, number 5, the mistake that keeps you stuck with alcohol use disorder is waiting. Waiting to take action. There is no day where you're going to wake up and this is going to be easy and simple and fun. You're going to have to run through the electric dog fence at some point. And so allowing yourself to stew in uncertainty, you know, I need to think about this. Like, there's nothing to figure out. All of those thoughts in your brain, that's the overthinking where you're trying to bypass your feelings of just accepting it is what it is. Now, how do I work with this? What can I do with this? Okay. So uncertainty is a feeling, not a fact. And so telling yourself you got to figure stuff out, well, even if you figure stuff out, certainty is also a feeling, not a fact. You can know something, and then 5 minutes later, you know something different. Truth changes. That's how we started this episode, okay? The other thing that you don't need to wait for is to be ready. Readiness is also usually a feeling, not actually a fact, okay? The other thing that I see a lot of is people think that they have to wait until they have the time or the energy or the money to do whatever it is they need to get their solution. But remember, as long as you are not actively engaging in the solution, you're spending your time, energy, and money on the problem. You're literally investing in the problem. One of my favorite lines is that when you realize you're in a hole, just stop digging. Like, stop digging and climb out of the hole. And that's another thing, you know, stop trying to do this by yourself. And here's why. Because you can't think your way out of a thinking problem. I like to say your bullshit detectors are in your ears. You don't know how crazy you sound until you hear yourself say it in the presence of another person. That's what turns on your bullshit detectors. And I know for me, with alcohol use disorder, I would have rather died. Not really, kind of though. But it was just like, the idea of admitting that I needed help was so devastating. But I was also under the impression that I had to get sober and say I was an alcoholic. Like, my next chapter program, we're not drunk, but we're not sober either, because it's not about the alcohol. We're working on emotional sobriety. And I think that's where I'll land the plane at this point. If you're interested in accepting the invitation from your higher self who's trying to get your attention, and you think you're fighting with alcohol, but really you're fighting with her, you're telling her to sit down and shut up, and you're pouring alcohol down her throat to silence her. If you're ready to accept the invitation of rising above this and allowing alcohol use disorder to become your teacher, to be your introduction into the skills of emotional sobriety, so that 1 year from now, you look back on today or one day soon as the day that you pulled up your big girl panties and said, you know what, I got this. If you are interested in seeing what it would be like to work with me as a coach, to learning more about the next chapter, then get in the show notes and schedule a discovery call with me. It's absolutely free. I am not high pressure sales. And I'll be honest, just scheduling a call does not mean that I'll bring you into the program. I have some pretty strict things that I'll cover with you in terms of what I expect and what would constitute you being a good fit to our group. I have a wonderful small group of women, and I'm very protective of our group. I only bring in people who are very coachable, who want to get out of their comfort zone, because I'm a tough coach. I'm going to put my foot on your ass and hold you accountable and teach you how to see through your own story. That's what I do. Some of my clients refer to me as the demon lady, and another one refers to me as the velvet hammer, and the rest of them don't tell me what they call me behind my back. But, you know, it's intense. A couple of my gals refer to TNC as boot camp for your brain. That's really what it feels like. But you can't snap your fingers and just solve all these problems. There's a lot of layers to the onion. And that's why I recently did away with the 12-week option and just went to a year commitment. Because you can understand the theory of emotional sobriety within a 12-week period, and you can correct your drinking problem within a 12-week period. Most of my gals reduce their drinking by 80% within a month. But it's only when alcohol is no longer your primary focus that the clouds clear and that you're able to focus because you actually have the bandwidth to do the thought work. Your mind can't change when you're in a state of stress or when your nervous system is dysregulated. And so it takes a month or two to learn all the basic concepts so that then you can start practicing them. You know, you can move from theory into application. And then there's a lot of practice. And unfortunately, we learn best from failure. And you need to be supported through that process. So I hope that this episode has brought you some clarity and given you maybe a different perspective on the big picture of where you're at and where you could be with the right set of tools. Feel free to reach out with me in an email or message me on TikTok or Instagram or Facebook if you have any questions. On TikTok, I'm at Hangover Whisperer, and Instagram and Facebook, I am Recover with Colleen. So message me if you have any questions. And then if you like this content and you want to share it with a friend, I really appreciate when you interact with the show digitally, because it tells the algorithm that people are listening and then they share it or suggest it to other people, like a good little algorithm does. So if you want to text a link to this episode or another to someone you know or post it on your socials, then you'll be helping to spread the word and let other women know that there is an alternative to the all or nothing black or white thinking that is keeping so many people stuck. There's hope, my friends. So thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week.